Cliff Central.
The revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
CliffCentral.com.
Future CEOs on CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to Future CEOs here on Cliff Central. We are live as Thursday, and it's a special Thursday, and it was also a special Wednesday. Phoebe, welcome to Future CEOs.
I'm happy to be here. Hi, Garrett.
Busy week.
It is a bit of a busy week,
and I mean, if we look out into the common area here just outside of the studio, we've got a very busy Cliff Central as well, so there's something really nice happening this evening, a creative session, creative with a K. Ari will probably do a little bit more informing everyone on what that is all about, but it's a very interesting session. We do some really weird and wacky things, but it's all about, you know, creating this creative energy. Last time they made us sit in the dark,
okay,
which was really weird, but also really interesting, because you, once you lose that part of your, or one of those senses, then you have to use other senses to create an experience.
Okay. I'll be there next time.
So let's go to yesterday. What was so special
Africa
about
Day.
Yesterday?
Africa Rising.
Yes. And we had an experience, didn't we?
Africa 80.
What is that?
A beautiful book written by 80 young African leaders, and it's basically about transforming the continent for the better through collaboration.
Yes.
And it was great to see so many young, enterprising, young, energetic, dynamic, smart, intelligent, and intellectual young people coming together, and they are a force to be reckoned with.
I'm sure all of those that are listening,
I'm describing somebody in studio.
We are, and we'll get to that in 2 seconds.
I just realized we are describing exactly our expert in studio today.
So that particular thing, Africa 80, I mean, the World Economic Forum has a group of individuals called
Correct.
Global Shapers, and so all of these young people are global shapers. It's throughout the continent that they pulled them together, and they've created this book, Africa 80. So just give it a good Google, and you'll see what that's all about. And then today's a special day. Why?
Take a Girl Child to Work Day.
That's why you're looking so good.
Initiated by Celsi. Absolutely great. That was in the city of Ekurhuleni, and it was exactly what we do here on the show. It was just about opening up the eyes and giving tools and giving motivation and inspiration and guidance to young girls out there just to reach their full potential and be CEOs.
Yeah, and so if you are sitting and you're hearing this conversation and you can answer the question, yes, I'm a future CEO, if we had to ask that to you. So if you're a young up-and-coming entrepreneur, maybe a dynamic individual in your own way, in a career somewhere, in a big organization, you want to be the CEO there, well, this show is for you. So let's do what you were doing this morning here in studio.
Let's do what we're here to do.
Mr. Sabanda, sometimes we go straight to the first name because we feel like we can. But in this particular instance, I mean, I have to be very, very respectful because you're a very interesting CEO. Welcome to the studio.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So I say, Mr. Sabanda, why? Well, you've got a history which is quite remarkable, which also includes 2 master's degrees. You're an admitted attorney, if I understand it correctly. You've got a wonderful history of leadership. Do you mind just giving everyone a snapshot of that, please?
Yeah, no, thank you very much. So it's a privilege to be part of this show and to just share with the listeners, you know, my background and also the work
that
we do at the Innovation Hub. I've been the CEO of the Innovation Hub since February 2011. So I've completed my first 5 years, and I'm on my last 5 years now, up until 2021. Prior to that, I was a group executive for commercialization with the Technology Innovation Agency, which is part of the Department of Science and Technology. And, you know, before that, I was a senior patent attorney and also acting executive director with the Innovation Fund, which is a funding agency, again, under the Department of Science and Technology. Which I joined in 2004 following leaving one of the leading IP firms, Adams & Adams, where I had trained to become a patent attorney.
Very nice.
Yeah, so but before becoming a patent attorney, I had cut my teeth in industry, working for De Beers Industrial Diamonds for about 7-8 years, making synthetic diamonds.
See, I'm starting to sweat a little. I'm feeling pressure.
I'm a bit intimidated. McLean, how did it all begin? Where did you grow up? Tell us a little bit of your childhood, because we want to know from where this amazing human being that is so recognized came from? Where did it all begin? Where are your roots?
Yes, I've very humble beginnings. I was born in a dusty township called Njube Township in Bulawayo across the Limpopo River. I was raised by my grandparents up until my grandfather passed away when I was about 10, 11, and then I moved in with my mother. And from there, I went to, in fact, I went to a government school, a primary school, and I was fortunate to go to a government school that was run by a board of governors. The fees were higher. My mother had saved enough money just to pay fees for 1 year. She was a secretary, and basically she said to me, this is the opportunity, you go out and see what you can do. And by the end of the first year, I'd managed to get a scholarship that managed to see me through my high school.
In this process, of course, you are having experiences along the way that are pointing you to things that you know, make you want to wake up in the morning. Things, I guess we often use the term passion, are passionate about, or things that just connect with us. Were there experiences that you were having along the way that really pointed you in the direction that you are now following?
Purpose.
Purpose, yes, very nice, thank you.
Yeah, so I think, you know, quite often, you know, people say that, you know, life happens to them. I think my life has been one where there's been quite a lot of, you know, perhaps planning, you know, guidance. My mother played a big role in my life. And as I was, you know, getting through school, you know, fortunately I was coming top of my grades, and so she guided me. And but much of it was really saying, what do I want to be? And I wanted to be an engineer. So that was a burning passion. Again, inspired by, you know, the person that was head boss at the time. And so by the time I finished high school, I knew that I wanted to be an engineer. Okay. I wanted to be a chemical engineer, however, but if you don't have money, quite often, you know, you change direction, and I was, you know, I had a bursary to become a metallurgical engineer. And I took that, and I was actually, I think, glad that I did that, because I work for an amazing company. I've had a great career as an engineer. I believe, contributed to, you know, to that particular field.
How did you then go from this engineer to IP Adams and Adams, and then moving from there to this other point? I mean, how did that all come together?
So when I joined De Beers Industrial Diamonds as a researcher engineer, I started to work a lot with patents, because we're developing cutting edge technologies in the diamond trade. But also, I was very ambitious. I wanted to sit on the boards of companies, so I'd spend some time having a look at the annual reports, seeing, you know, these guys, what qualifications they have. And what I got was that most of them had a second qualification. Within De Beers, there was a member on the board that had a legal qualification, so it inspired me. I couldn't do an MBA at the time because you needed to have 3 years' experience, and the brains were still fresh. So I started to then, you know, study LLB, you know, part time with UNISA, and that helped. By the time I was finishing off my LLB in 2001, I started to really think, what did I want to do, you know, with my life? And I looked around. The most natural field was to become a patent attorney. There were not any black African patent attorneys at the time, and it looked quite an interesting challenge. But yet at the same time, there was also this small problem that in order to become a patent attorney, I needed to move and do articles with the law firm, take a salary cut. But I made a decision that it was all worthwhile. So at the time, De Beers was restructuring. I took a package and left, paid off a few things, and started off at the bottom of the ladder again.
How many of us would do that? I mean, it's an interesting thought to take one step back in order to take 10 steps forward.
The discipline.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell us about the Innovation Hub.
The Innovation Hub is an exciting institution. It's an innovation agency of the Gauteng province. It falls under the Department of Economic Development and is also a subsidiary of the Gauteng Growth and Development Agency. And we've been doing incredible work. It was established in about 2002 and moved to the current location in 2005. Many people know us as being located in Pretoria.
In China, yes, correct.
So our business involves four things, really: skills development, enterprise development, fostering innovation, and also providing spaces, incubation spaces, and also spaces for companies, established companies, to come and establish themselves. So we incubate currently over 100 young entrepreneurs right across the field. We have, in about a year ago, started to go out into the townships. So we've got exciting products going in the townships. We've got Ekasi Labs in Soweto, the Empowerment Zone, Ekasi Labs in Harankua Unit 6. We're opening up another Ekasi Labs in Alex, and we're going to be going to Mohlakeng. We just opening up a space now in Bramfontein that's going to be focusing on gaming.
Okay.
Digital gaming.
Wow.
And then we have another one, which is actually quite interesting in the creative space, that we started with Urban Brew Studios, as well as the Houghton Enterprise Propeller, which is the Maxim Media, where we look at the creatives, particularly in the film and media space.
Love that.
Very, very nice. Yeah.
You know what? Gareth and I were discussing how we're going to link who you are, what you've achieved academically, and the Innovation Hub. Connect us. Give us parallels.
So when I moved from De Beers and joined the Adams & Adams, part of it was really this curiosity around inventions. Mm. And then I started to say, how do you then protect things and then move them into the market? And so the move to the Innovation Fund gave me that. And then I was fortunate when I moved from TIA and I was asked to go into the Innovation in a Hub. That it really tied in, because it's really about, you know, the future. It's about entrepreneurs. It's about supporting the next big ideas. And what we see on a daily basis is young people that have got brilliant ideas, and all they need is somebody that can believe in them, that can support them.
Just give them a little bit of structure. Right?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, the Houghton government has done incredible things, and currently under the leadership of Makura, are doing incredible things to be able to really empower these young people. And really, I think the transition for me has been quite an easy one. And within the Innovation Hub, a technical background does help. And a legal background does help as well. Particularly, you know, with new ideas, there's always intellectual property.
Yes.
And people are worried about other people stealing their ideas.
Yep.
Yeah,
yes.
So it's really quite an interesting thing to be there, and I'm having fun.
You know what's so interesting, Clivia? I enjoy the fact that often what we do, and I say enjoy in a certain kind of way, the fact that so many of us, we look at individuals like yourself. May I now call you McLean? Is that okay? Where we think, well, we have to do this and that and this and that to get into this kind of position. Certainly we must be qualified. We must have a certain level of understanding. But the word that I picked out from what you've just said is curiosity led me here. It was curiosity that connected. It wasn't necessarily a master's degree, although it certainly positioned you perfectly for the transition. And I would hate for too many people not to understand it. That's the core of it. Be curious.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think being curious is important. And then the second thing is having a passion for what you're doing. If you wake up in the morning and it's a drag to go to work, I think you must quit. Mm. Find, you know, that passion. Find something that, you know, will keep you awake. But also, I think a lesson that I learned from my mother is you've got to actually work hard. The harder you work, the luckier you become. Mm. Each person that you meet along, you know, your path, there's a reason why you meet them. And I also don't believe that there's anything such as a self-made, you know, person.
Very nice.
I think I am what I am because of the very many people that I've met along the way that have entrusted me with certain responsibilities, believed in me, gave me feedback, and really wanted me to, you know, to succeed.
Very, very nice.
In being the CEO of Innovation Hub, how would you describe your leadership skills?
I think that is a work in progress. I mean, I think for most of us as leaders, quite often we come from a technical background, and dealing with people is something that at times you learn as you go along. And I've learned, I think, over the last 5 years that I cannot be everywhere. I cannot be the magic of an organization. organizations function because of people. And in essence, part of the journey that we're going through now is empowering all of our staff at all different levels to understand that they are the magic. They are the ones that make a difference out there. Each one of them is the ambassador of the innovation hub. And therefore, the guys in skills development need to lead that particular part. I can only provide guidance. Of course, there'll be areas where I believe that we need to go one direction, and therefore, as a leader, you take that particular lead and say, guys, this is where we need to go for these particular reasons, and then everybody must then go in that particular direction. But quite often, at times, you're also wrong as a leader. And I think the important thing is to reflect, and when you're wrong, you admit that you're wrong. And correct the path.
Yeah, very, very nice. Lubi, often, I don't know where this quote came from. You often talk about this idea of leaders or readers, and so we do. We seem to consume information wherever we can get our hands on it. There are, I mean, if you walk into any store or any bookstore, there's this wall, and it's all management and leadership books. And this one says this, and this one says something else. What don't they teach, though? So you're in it, you're experiencing it. What don't leaders and management books teach about being a leader?
I think much of leadership is making decisions with limited information.
I like that. So ambiguity is where
yes,
you exist.
Yes, yes. So, I mean, I find quite often, you know, you've got people that are expecting to make a decision. You don't have all the facts. You have to make decisions with whatever limited information that you have. But the other thing I think that quite often they don't teach you is the fact that, you know, as a leader, you have to make it's really the right decisions in the best interest of the organization. And quite often you'll be unpopular.
Nice point.
And you should be prepared to be unpopular. You should, you know, as long as you're doing it in the best interests of the organization and the people within the organization. So you need to have a thick skin, you know, in the right kind of way. So part of, I think, the whole thing about leadership is really making the decisions, taking into consideration where the organization is at, but also the people within the organization, because each and every one of them wakes up in the morning and decides that they're going to come and be part of your dream, part of your vision as a leader.
Yeah, they're going to invest their life.
Absolutely.
Into it, really, right?
So as they leave home, often I say to some of the staff that it's an honor for them to actually, you know, come and be part of this particular journey. And so, in essence, I think the critical thing is just giving them space to be able to grow, and also knowing that they're not going to be there forever. So whilst they're serving the organization, it's critical that as leaders we provide the employees an opportunity, you know, to grow, you know, as well.
That's an interesting point. Sorry, employee number three, you're not going to be here forever. That's an interesting statement, but it's so true, isn't it? And we don't sometimes communicate then with employee number three what the right strategy is for them in their career at that point. Very nice point. Yeah. I like it.
We have to talk about your failures, because I think that as entrepreneurs, that's where most of our growth comes from, and that's our success. Tell us about a story, because we like stories on the show, about a failure that you made within the CEO position, but you learned from it. But it was a hard-hitting failure that affected you and affected the company.
I think if I reflect in terms of the 5 years of the Innovation Hub, the biggest mistake has been one of hiring. So quite often we hire people because we like them. And that is wrong. We've got to hire the people that are best for the particular position. And the people that we like may not necessarily be the best people within the organization. So there are instances when you have a panel that is there to assist you, and the panel says, yes, this is the best person, and yes, they were great at the interview, and you also like them. But somehow you got this thing in your stomach, your hunch says, no, this is not the right person. and somehow you know it, and you try to almost hide that away. And we've had that at least two incidents within the organization where we've made bad hiring choices. And unfortunately, the organization has to suffer because you then have to carry the people through. And once the people are within the organization, you have a responsibility to, to make them be productive. But quite often it doesn't work, and therefore you have to let people, go. And that particular process of letting the people go is not an easy one. And so my biggest, challenge is actually, the people decisions, that if I have to make a difficult people, decision, I actually get sick, in a way.
It's such a stress.
But
we've heard these stories before, though. So some really long lasting or difficult mistakes to get by are often in a merger or acquisition. Mm. You've mm. not measured the culture properly. You've not done something correctly. I think the iConnect CEO shared this with us last week. But then also the hiring side of everything.
Hiring and firing.
Because as you've said before, businesses are really built or function because of people. Mm. And especially if this person that you've hired is in a position of significant influence, you've got a real big problem. Mm. On your hands. Mm. How have you dealt with it, though? So just maybe a secondary question. Yeah. How do you deal with someone that you just know is not then the right fit? What do you do?
So I think, part of it is having an open discussion with the person. And if they've been with the organization for some time and there's perhaps openings within the organization, you can have a discussion to figure out how they perhaps can move into that. If that is not open, then it's a matter of again going back to performance management and say we have to do this, and managing people out. Mm-hmm. And that is not easy. In fact, it's not actually a nice thing for any leader to be managing people out. In certain instances, if you're lucky, you speak to the people and you both agree that no, it's not a fit. And wherever you can do a good reference and support them in looking for a place outside, that actually works pretty well.
Because, I love the fact that you're so organically in touch with what's happening on, the floor. You know what I mean? And that's rare, but at the same time, that makes the real great CEO. Mm-hmm. Continue, sir.
Yeah, so, I mean, really, I think part of it is, and I think this is the big mistake that we make as leaders, is not listening.
Sure.
There's a lot of... But also, I think one needs to be cautious because at times you can over-listen.
Okay.
I think within an organization, there'll be, people that will have the loudest voices, and then there'll be other people that will say very little. And so it's just important to be able to get a balance, get a pulse in terms of what's going on. Mm. And in some cases, with people, they may be great people, but they're not good for that organization. They'll be great somewhere else. And I think those are the difficult, decisions and choices when you say to somebody, you're great, but, in this particular role, perhaps you're not fitting in.
The skill of listening is significant. How do you listen? So there's one, people hear, but they don't often listen. Mm. People are speaking, but the person across from them or the person that is speaking is probably saying something different with their body language. Mm. What are some tips around listening? Because you've mentioned that skill.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a work in progress. I think for many people, if I reflect on some of the best listeners that I've seen, leaders, it's people that when you talk to them, they're looking at you, they're giving you the full attention. But also quite often when you're listening, it's the messages that is not being said. There are things that people want to say, but they're not actually saying. And I think as a leader is to, perhaps reflect, on that. So whenever I have a conversation, often it keeps playing in my mind, and I may come back, to somebody a couple of days later and say, by the way, is this what you really meant?
Mm.
So I think, listening, and I think somebody say that you're given 2 ears and
one mouth.
But I think the temptation quite often is we want to hear ourselves talking. Yeah.
The best advice you've ever received.
I think the For me, the best advice was really from my mother. It was twofold. One is don't let anybody outwork you. So you got to work harder than anybody else. And the second advice from her as well was never look down on anyone. So she said, you know, try to stay humble, and every person that you meet is important, whether they're cleaner or whatever station in life they're in, because it's not a destination.
You
never know what happens tomorrow.
Absolutely.
Because tomorrow I might be going with my CV, you know, to them and asking for a job.
I, as time begins to wind down here, we want to try and extract as much from you as absolutely possible. If we were to ask you to recommend some reading material for us, again, readers or leaders,
readers or readers.
Well, I think we can say readers or leaders, maybe.
I prefer leaders or readers.
Okay, we'll go with that. What would you recommend our future CEOs, community, get their hands on right now and pour over right now?
Yeah, I think there's a few books. I think for first time, you know, leaders or CEOs,
yep.
The first 90 days is quite a good book.
Nice, very nice.
And for people that are perhaps at a point where they're trying to get the organization to perform, there's a book called The Four Disciplines of Execution.
Four Disciplines of Execution.
Yeah, it's an incredible book. One of the co-authors is Sean Covey.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So it's a great book. There is also the 10 Leadership Commandments, which is a great book,
that.
I think, for
Sounds
you know
great.
For leaders, because the lessons are taken from the journey of Moses. And, you know, I think Moses was a great leader, but also in his early stages, you know, I found parallels, you know, with Moses, because he tried to be everything. And which is why at times you say he never reached the promised land. He just saw it, but never reached it.
Mm.
And I think the 10 Commandments of Leadership is a great book. There is The Outlier, which is an incredible book as well, I think, for leaders. I also read a lot on Og Mandino, so The Greatest Miracle in the World, you know, is also, you know, a great book.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Yeah, I'm writing these down.
Like, okay,
very,
like,
very, very nice.
You've got to get these.
Klubi, a question?
Stay curious, Klubi. Saying it to myself, it's just, I love what you said about curiosity. Mm. That's an imperative.
If you could go back, and maybe we can use this as a final question before we have to say goodbye. If you could go back and you could speak to the young 20-year-old future CEO you, what would you say to yourself?
Yeah, so that's quite an interesting one, because I think regrets in life are not, I think people need not live with regrets, but I think if I was to go back, I would probably, you know, say, stay hungry, work with more urgency, and build a much bigger network.
Interesting.
Because I think in life, we don't get by because we're smart. I think we get through life because we work harder, but also because we have other people in our network that we empower, and they empower us. It's really about those connections, you know, in life, if you can network more. And I think that's one thing that, you know, perhaps if I was to start over again, I would actually work more on my ability to be able to network and connect with more people.
Yeah, really connect.
Yeah.
I mean, there's one thing to, it's one thing to go to a networking event or function. It's another thing to actually connect.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah, because,
nice.
You know, the networking is really about, you know, if I met Klubi, you know, today, part of it is really I need to figure out what is she interested in? You know, what is that one or two burning goals that she's working on? And then how do I then find somebody in my network that I can connect her to, who can then empower her to be able to achieve whatever she wants to achieve? By so doing, she is empowered. She can then empower somebody else. You know, one day she will come back and say, she'll remember that I'm working on something, and she'll connect me to somebody else. It's really about networks. And the people that have got more networks are the people that would succeed, even at a higher pace than the smartest. So you can have a master's or PhD, but if you're bad at networking and connecting building people, those connections, you'll not go that far.
So it was stay hungry. It was
curiosity.
It was work with more, with a sense of urgency, and then make sure you know how to connect.
Love that.
Mr. McLean Sabunda, CEO of the Innovation Hub, thank you very much for joining us today.
Can I say something?
Absolutely, you can.
The trouble is we think we have time.
Yes.
The trouble is we think we have time. Thank you. Thank you, Hubie, and thank you very, very much. We will be back after this. We are going to be talking to Bradley from Platinum Seed. Let's get him into studio, and we will catch up with him right after this.
Future CEOs.
Cliff Central.
Revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
CliffCentral.com.